This is The Spark. I'm Martha Woodruff. If you have ever visited the Rotunda, Colonial Williamsburg, or Mount Vernon, you've most likely laid eyes on examples of Virginia craftsmen's 18th century reproduction furniture. According to an article published in the Harvard Business Review, all craftsman furniture was either an exact copy or a modification of an actual antique. The traditional designs and techniques used at the craft house significantly increased the labor required to build the furniture over that of a mass producer. Besides carved designs and intricate inlays, the craft house used such older techniques as wood pins, mortise and tenon joints, and dovetailed drawers. Virginia Craftsman, as a company, has dwindled, until almost 67-year-old Roy Swartz is by way of being the last craftsman standing. I tracked Roy down in his Hinton workshop, contemplating a pattern book, and surrounded by wood, wood, and more wood.
This is sort of something. Right now I'm getting ready to do three of these things. It's a sideboard. It's the one that's in Mount Vernon. The original of it is in Mount Vernon, which is George Washington's home. Not his birthplace, but his home.
And what's involved in doing this? I mean, describe it.
It's a lot of solid woods with two-plied veneer added to these curved parts so that it gives you this burly, the crotch veneered effect that everybody really likes. And all the inlays have to be each one cut out individually, and all these lines has to be put in there individually. It's just a lot of hours.
Whom are you making this for?
I have a customer, one local, and two of them are going to Indiana. Most of the stuff we do, unfortunately, does not go to this area. People, these are country people around here. They don't buy this kind of stuff.
So you do pretty formal furniture.
We do,
this
is Hepple White, but we do everything from, that's all our planned patterns, all of our wooden patterns. Mm-hmm. That is just nothing but a trailer truckload of patterns that used to hang in this room when we was in town. But we have a few country pieces. I have a lot of country pieces that's not in. This is just one catalog that was done over the years.
Mm-hmm.
See, these are country-looking pieces. But most of the stuff we do is pretty formal. But I do everything from a birdhouse to the most elegant piece of furniture you ever seen in your life. But anyway, these are just some of the things that we do so you understand that all these piles of stuff is just not clutter. It's just laying here for the sake of laying here.
Who's we? You keep talking about we.
We is me and myself and whoever else I can pick up off the street. Everywhere from a bum to sophisticated women.
So it's basically you by yourself making these beautiful pieces
me
of furniture.
Me and myself. And the only way to get a job done, get it right, as my grandmother used to say, is if you want it done, done right, do it yourself. Well, if I lived till August, I'll be 67 years old. It ain't the years, it's the mileage that I got on this old body. The years don't amount to nothing. That's very short. But I was never a kid. So I don't have any childhood things to tell you other than when the kids was playing ball and doing all the stupid, idiotic sports stuff and whatever the kids do or did then. They do drugs nowadays, but back then they played ball and whatever, but I was out in the barn or somewhere building a birdhouse or a chicken coop or doing something out of wood with nothing but some old wore out beat up tools that I scrounged up from laying around everywhere in the house and the barn and everywhere else. So, and then I
were your family woodworkers or
no my daddy was an absolute teetotal alcoholic and a bum and no good person, and my mother was the most wonderful person that ever was on the earth, and they actually did crafted type stuff that they wove rugs. Her and my grandmother did the hand woven carpets and things like that. Actually, this company that the name that we use now, actually built them a loom that could build a rug that was 12 feet wide. So that was my first connection with this woodworking, is going to that shop and seeing those guys in there working. And when I was not even old enough to get out of the car, they made us stay in the car because they went in there to get these parts and whatever needed to be fixed that went with this loom.
You're a kid in the car. And your mother and grandmother go in to get some loom parts. Then what happens in your road to becoming?
I just seen those guys in there working. I just like what I saw, I guess. And it's, I've never, very few things I remember from my childhood other than things like that. In other words, I don't remember playing ball. I remember getting away from them. They play ball, I leave. So it's just the way it was.
When did you actually start working with wood?
For a living, when I was 13 years old.
All right.
Well, I thought I was doing it for a living. Actually, back then you had to have a county business license. I was 13 years old, went in there, and two old broken down women, maybe an old man sitting around in there somewhere that, you know, they was dumbfounded. Here some kid walks in here and wants to lay down his $6.75, I think it was, for a business license. I still remember them old women. They probably wasn't really that old back then. They probably, but they looked ancient to me.
Younger than we are.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. They was probably in their 30s or 40s, maybe. Yeah.
All right. You're in there 13. You get your business license. What you want a business license for?
Well, because you're required to have one then.
If you wanted to sell something.
If you wanted to buy and or do a business.
Right. So what was your business?
And back then, they pushed. I mean, it was a big thing. I mean, they wouldn't have never, well, the chance of them coming after a 13-year-old kid. But I wanted, you know. I didn't develop the knack for trying to run a business. I'd say trying, because I never have been successful, but I've tried.
What was the business you had in mind at 13?
Building furniture.
No kidding.
Yeah.
You were already building furniture.
Yeah. I was building, you know, small-scale stuff, birdhouses and just simple stuff, little table, little, did some repair and refinishing work, went out to an old auction sale and buy old broken down stuff. My mother would take me out and drop me off in the, whenever the thing was starting in the mornings, and I'd stay there all day, and she'd come back. It was morning, she could haul in that old station wagon to get back home, stuff to fix up.
What happens next?
Mm-hmm. Well, I still had to stay in school for a certain amount of years, you know, but then I decided that I already knew more than they did, you know. I was a pretty smart kid. I still say that. Those teachers, well, don't get me into public schools. They didn't have anything to offer. Schools didn't have anything to offer me. Yeah, the math, the basic math, and past the fifth grade, it wasn't worth spending my time on. But I went further than that. When I was in high school, I wanted to take what they call industrial arts class in. Of course, they let me take 1 year of it. The only class I ever made A's and B's in my life in any school. So they decided I had to do this, and I had to take this, and I had to take that. So I said, you know, I'm about done with you people. I said, if I can't do something I want to do that I'm interested in, you know, I'm out of here. I'm going to leave this place when I'm old enough. I hung on a little while longer. But I stayed pretty good true to my word, and I still say the same thing today, that's what's wrong with the public school system. They don't teach young kids anything with hands-on. It's all about books and pushing buttons, you know. That don't work for everybody. They're trying to mold every kid in the same mold. It didn't work then, ain't going to work now, never will work. I just liked wood. I just liked doing things with wood. I was always going back in the field and cutting down a tree and making bows or anything, you know, bows to shoot arrows with. if it's made the best could be made, I'm still digging for a better way to make it. And that's why I don't make any money, because I spend too much time doing what people out here making good money in this kind of work, or just ignore the little detail things. My first tools was some old woodworking tools, an old auger brace, and a couple old saws, and some old beat-up tools. It stayed in a room, in a storage room in the old house that I was raised in, that belonged to my grandfather. Of course, my grandmother wouldn't let me get them out for a long, long time, but then I finally got old enough that she let me get this and that and the other, and I've still got the old toolbox and those old tools today, which are very, very few, but I've still got them. A lot of stuff I did was out, like, because we had a small farm type city. We had the cows, the pigs, and the chickens, and hogs, and, you know, just whatever. You know, back then you raised your own meat in the garden and everything. You know, I was out there building pig pens and cow stalls and just doing whatever needed to be done while the rest of the kids was killing time somewhere. After I got through all that there, I went to work for Virginia Craftsman when I was 18 years old.
And what were you doing?
Back then, the only job they had open then was hand sanding. So I did that pretty much for 2 years. Started out and made $1.25 an hour. 5 hours overtime, you got $49.99 take home.
And when was this?
That was in 1963, I think. 1963.
Were you bored?
Was I bored?
Yeah.
I was bored doing the same thing over and over every day, but that was all that was available. And, you know, I got the experience of just being there and watching. You had to pay attention to those old guys, which was some of the greatest craftspeople that ever was around.
Tell me about the old guys.
Well, for the most part, the most of them, you just kind of watched and kept your mouth shut and saw what they was doing and paid attention, just paid attention. And one day they said, well, could you come over and help me do this or help do that? So you got, you know, turn this over, turn that over. So you got a feel for how to turn and twist and put things on a workbench that stayed there where you could work on it and just saw how they've done things. And then Uncle Sam Saturday needed me for a couple of years. Done very well there. Wish I hadn't done it now, but I did. I wouldn't do it again, but that's another sad story. But I was dumb enough to come back and go back to work the same place. Stayed home a week and went back to work after being gone for 2 years in Europe.
Were you, when you say you were dumb enough, I somehow suspect you don't mean that. I suspect you were glad to go back?
This kind of work, well, yes, this kind of work is, it's a very skilled and talented kind of work, but it's always been the lowest paid of anything you can get. I mean, it always was. Mechanics, electricians, and whatever, you know, it seemed like they was twice the money that we could get. It's so labor intense that you can't charge what you should charge to really make what they make at a lot of the plants and places like that.
So why do you do it?
Why do I do it? Just for love of it, I guess. Or just plain stupid, too dumb to go out and do anything else.
At what point did you start making Hebblewhite High Boy?
Well, I must have been 21 years old when I got out of the service. And that when I went back, I'd done the carving.
Okay.
They took me over to start me out of carving.
Wait a minute.
Actually, these things right here. You'll never keep up with me, so don't even try.
And those are hand carved?
They're hand carved. I remember a fellow by the name of Bob Miller, which was a shop foreman, come over there with a big pile of them things. First time I'd ever cut the hardest hickory you can cut, and said, there's a drawer full of chisels, and here's a stack of these. Do these. And walked away.
You'd sort of arrived. You were a furniture maker.
Yeah. Well, I was before I left, because I already knew pretty much how to do a lot of stuff. But then when I'd run out of the carving stuff, I would do work on the bench work and just do whatever. I could work about anything. And then there was another fellow that, sort of one of my mentors, you might say, that his picture puts on.
All right, tell me about him.
A fellow by the name of Frank Sumpter. Sort of a rough sort of a guy, but a real nice guy. If he liked you, he'd do anything in the world for you. If he didn't like you, he'd just stayed away from you. It's as simple as that. He done carving. He done upholstery work. He could do anything in that shop, pretty much. Yeah. So, you know, we'd always, he'd show me this and show me that and do this and don't do that and...
When you joined him, it was a busy shop.
It was a busy shop, and I think there was probably somewhere between 15 and 20 people working there at the time.
Wow.
Yeah.
And then what happened?
What happened? Yeah, it's a shame to see something like that with all the historical significance behind all this stuff. The guy that started it came up here in the Depression years and got that business. They developed that business in the Depression years. Of course, they got in with the people in Dearborn, you know, Henry Ford Museum and the people... John Rockefeller in Williamsburg, you know, he was the man behind getting Williamsburg going, and somehow all them things came together, and they realized that they had these country hicks up here in Harrisonburg that could build furniture.
Roy Schwartz looks around his workshop. It's an old company, he says, and we're just trying to keep this name going. My thanks to Rick Showalter of Singers Glen for putting me in touch with Roy, and there's a link to Virginia Craftsman's Facebook page, which has lots of pictures of Roy and his furniture, on the Spark page at WMRA.org.